Good afternoon, members. My name is Fazila Mohammed. I'm the Registrar of Members Interest. Just to also say that the National Council of Provinces component is on, I think a lot of the members are on oversight, which is why they're not available.
Okay, thanks, Chair. My name is Roman Sondi, Councillor from the City of Joburg.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and the distinguished delegation from Gauteng Province. My name is Sam Matthias. I'm a member of the Joint Standing Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Dolim Kosana. I'm the executive secretary to the co-chairperson of the ethics.
Good day. My name is Akida Mugwena from Parliament Communication Service.
Good day, I'm Amanda. I'm with the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good day, members. I'm Ladi Lepozi, an official photographer of Parliament.
Afternoon, everybody. My name is Devas Mabilisa, Internal Communications Parliament.
Good afternoon, Ernest Chipu, Legal Services, City of Joburg.
Good day. My name is Councillor Nakhalifa from City of Joburg.
Good day. My name is Majasana Maringa from Ethics Committee.
Thank you, sir. My name is Councillor Bongani Nkwanyana, Ethics Committee in the City of Johannesburg.
Good day, Chairperson. My name is Councillor Zoro Tondumalo, Chairperson for Ethics in the City of Joburg. Thank you.
Good Chairperson, this is Obin Ngwane from the Ethics Committee, Johannesburg.
Shime Mutamme, member of the Ethics Committee, City of Johannesburg.
Good day, my name is Shelina Fumbada, member of the committee.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Good day, members. I'm Lemias Mashiri, the member of the Ethics Committee.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patricia Adams, and I'm a member of the Ethics Committee.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dr. Kevin Rex. I'm from the City of Johannesburg. Thank you.
Good day, goeiemorgen aan Councillor Gert Niemand van de Ethics Committee en Ward Council City of Johannesburg.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Councillor Wenza Singh, the Ethics Committee member from the City of Johannesburg.
Good day, Paul Masemola, member of the Ethics Committee in Johannesburg.
No, thank you very much. I'm sure everybody feels welcome to the meeting. What really brings us together is it's the fact that the work that you do in Johannesburg relates very much so to the work that we do in this committee of Parliament. We thought that it would be a good idea to have a conversation, to exchange some ideas and to share some experiences. We have kept the format for this meeting fairly simple. You will do your presentation, and thereafter some questions may be raised, comments made, and we can then have some discussion. We will do pretty much the same thing: make the presentation, please have space for questions. Comment and have some discussions. We know that these discussions are relatively fairly new, given the newness of many similar committees across the country in various legislatures and government institutions. So what we'll do is to start with the process. But as we engage, as we'll do so continuously over many months, we hope to really try and ensure that we borrow from each other, identify best practice, and adapt it to our own individual specific situations in terms of where we are located. So very very simply, this conversation is but a beginning of many other engagements and discussions that we will be involved in as we move into the future. I'm not sure who from the City of Johannesburg is going to make the presentation, but the program, if you look at it very briefly, this one page, as it is at the tour by Public Education Office, then there's opening and welcome, which is what I've just done. Then there's a briefing
code of conduct. So Fazila will take us through that. Fazila Mohammed is the registrar on our part, but we do need to have City of Johannesburg person also speaking under that, leading us under that item. The questions, discussions, and so on. Of course, we'll close the meeting. Thereafter, the delegation will be assisted to the gallery and be broadly part of the parliamentary session. We can start either way, Joburg or the city of Johannesburg or the ethics committee of parliament. So I'll ask the question, who's the person who's going to represent Joburg in terms of making the presentation? Yes, Matoto.
Good day once more, Chairperson. Thank you. The city of Joburg has this committee called Ethics Committee. It's a fairly new committee, which has started, I can say, last year. And in this committee, I'm not going to count all the committees, but specifically the committee that came here today. We had an interest as ethics committee, as I've said, that the committee is fairly new. We needed to get to come here to you to learn more about how you really conduct this committee. Our committee is not sitting every day. We are directed by problems and cases that come our way. I can say to you that maybe in 2 to 3 months we might be having a break because of the people are keeping to the code of conduct of the council. But the minute there is a problem, then this committee converge to deal with that particular problem at that very time. It is a multi-party committee. We've got all the other political parties that are supposed to be part of this committee as the parliament is operating. So the trend is that every problem or maybe there is a misconduct that is being done by some of the councillors, it starts from our speaker. The speaker is the person that has to deal and assess if that particular problem that has been brought to her, will it form a misconduct? If that is the case, then it will be channeled to the chief whip, and it will come to this committee. And we don't get the misconduct willy-nilly. We have to have a day. By that day, we get the agenda on the day of our sitting. Because of the nature of the way the committee is been formulated, nobody must know what is happening up until the committee sits, and then we can look at the misconduct that has been committed by one of our councillors. We've got a commissioner that assists us as well. We have to deal with what the code of conduct that guides this committee, actually. And the code of conduct and the rules, we look at that stipulates as to how to deal with whatever that was sitting for. And we are assisted by our commissioner. If the case is beyond us, we have to take the case to the commissioner because his terms of reference is open for him to investigate and go, if it needs be, that he goes to court and whatsoever, he's got all the leeway to do the case because his terms of reference is open. We are not supposed to be investigating the case up until to court because our terms of reference doesn't allow us. So at the end of the day, the commissioner takes the case, and after he has worked on the case, he brings the case back to us. And we deliberate on the case. And if really we feel that the commissioner has applied his mind and everything has been dealt with accordingly, and then we will, as a committee, sit together and observe and deliberate once more on the return of the commissioner's response, and then we'll take our cue from that, whether the commissioner is really giving us a guidance. In this committee, we've got legal advisors, as all the committees are having. We've got legal advisors, which is supporting this committee. And when everybody is supposed to be participating, it is not only the chair that has to look at the matters, but we've got a whip as well, which is why Zondi is making it a point that things are run accordingly. And we've got the councillors, as I've stipulated when I started introducing. So as I said that our committee is telling you, there are in some instances you may find that no, you're not doing so good and you need some capacitation. As the committee is new, you need to explore and get some more information from different sources to check if really we're doing our job optimally. So hence we are here today to learn from the best, and we believe that it will produce good results for us if we can get a direction, and maybe if we may come, you know, often, not only once, but it depends on the budget, to have some time to sit with you and observe as to how do you really deliberate on your issues and your outcome after deliberation. I think I will stop there for now, and some members of the committee, they might also be adding on what I've just highlighted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any additions from the team from Joburg? Yes, Councillor.
No. I think what we also have are challenges that are facing this committee, the way we conduct ourselves. Remember that we're coming from different parties, and we sit as a committee. We sometimes become biased in terms of who the member that is appearing before the committee, which becomes a problem in terms of making a proper determination as a committee. Because remember that when you sit as an ethics committee, it means we need to be transparent and make sure that we are fair in terms of dealing with the matter. So in some cases, you can see even if people don't say it openly, but the body language will tell you that there is a defense in some of us, if maybe it's an ANC member that is appearing before the committee. As ANC members, maybe we try to find a defensive mechanism just to protect that. So I'm saying maybe something that will help also get an advice as to how to proceed as a committee to make sure that whatever we take as a decision or whoever appears before the committee, we need to be fair and transparent and make sure that the decision is a decision that is going to be embraced by the council and the whole community of the city of Joburg. That's one. Number two, we sometimes have, as a speaker, she's the person who's responsible for our committees, especially standing committees. Now, she sometimes refer a matter to us, but there will be a recommendation that the matter must then go straight to the ethics commissioner or to the commissioner, which I find it very strange, because my understanding is that her responsibility is to send that particular information to us, then we as the committee can make a determination whether we take or refer the matter to the commissioner. Yes, so sometimes there is that confusion. The last thing, or the other thing, is there are some individual councillors. If maybe there is an allegation against that councillor, she or he will decide to go straight to the commissioner and say to the commissioner, please investigate this matter. Let's say there is an allegation in the newspaper about me. Instead of referring the matter to the speaker and then to the ethics committee, that person will decide to refer the matter himself, go direct to the commissioner to say, can you please? So I'm saying sometimes we find that there are conflict of interest, or not conflict of interest, bypassing the system, if I can put it that way. So those are the things that I wanted to raise. The last one is the sanctions, or sanctioning, if we find somebody guilty. Well, there are different sanctions as a committee that we can apply, but maybe you can also advise us as to how to proceed in terms of sanctions. I know that they might differ from parliament to the municipality, and also depending in terms of what was the issue. Thanks, Chair.
Very much, Councillor Zondi. Are there any other comments from the drawing team? Yes, ma'am.
Just only one, Chairperson. I just want to raise the issue as to say, how do we deal with the issue of, and I will put it in this fashion, when we realize that we are dealing with a case, but somehow somebody shifts goalposts all the time. As a result, you realize that it takes now a longer period for a case to be dealt with, by bringing in excuses. Each time the committee has to sit, an alleged person is not available. And as you look at it, you realize that you get the same information now and then, but finally you realize that it derails now the progress that the committee is supposed to make. Thank you.
Oh no, the problem is that still on the other side. I just want to check, how do you deal with a situation where you... Oh, Councillor Paul Masemola, where you find that... Councillor Majafana Marika, where you find that there are people involved who are not necessarily on the employee of government, who are supposed to come and testify, or whether you subpoena them, or what do you do as a committee for them to be part or in that committee?
Yeah, Jefferson, just an addition. I've just clicked on the commissioner's the commissioner is also... The commissioner is also supposed to be assisting us with the disclosures, and we do our disclosures yearly. Everybody has to disclose the financial interest. It is part of us. We deal with that, and we each time send some reminders to all councillors to ensure that their interests are really revoked, and they have to at least ensure that they have signed new disclosures, because disclosures happen almost today and every day. So it's part of the committee. It's just Ms. Mama. Thanks.
Yes, Councillor Niemand. I just like to find out from you as Niemand. For you as chairperson, how do you involve in ensuring that open and frank discussion takes place and that its committee meeting is not drawn aligned with political aspirations? Thanks.
Part of the questions that have been raised really are about, you know, what is it that the Ethics Committee is doing in Parliament? How does it manage its own issues and so on? And I thought that on the basis of that, it may be a good idea to allow Fazila to make a presentation. So we're going to have a discussion, although we can try and separate the issues. That discussion will be informed by what has been said from both teams. There also obviously the separate kind of discussion that will relate on the situation in Jordan. Can you please allow me to do that? Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Joint Committee on Ethics and Members' Interest in Parliament was established in 1997. So it has a continuous kind of, it has existed continuously since 1997. Actually since 1996 when it first got its mandate. I was employed in 1997, so I've had uninterrupted service in the work of the committee since 1997. So there has been a kind of institutional memory in the work of the committee. This is just to give you a sense of, you know, there are two different systems in terms of how the Joburg City Council looks at the way the investigation of complaints and the way we do it here in Parliament. I'm not going to advocate one is better than the other, but just to talk through the different issues. Just to tell you that Parliament, I'm just going to talk generally, but also talk and maybe in my presentation touch on some of the issues you raised. So in terms of the scope of the committee, the parliamentary committee, we have our rule. I know that the code of conduct for councillors emanates from the legislation, you know, the Systems Act, and a lot of it is informed. I know Joburg City Council has got its own rules around how the act, you know, you people have taken it and adapted it in terms of the act, in terms of you people have your own integrity commissioner, etc. But in Parliament, our code emanates from the rules. But it's important to understand what are the purposes of a code. You know, because very often you get involved in the detail of the code. And if you get involved in the detail, you forget the big picture. And why do we have a code in the first place? Because this really informs the work of the committee. A code of conduct is part of a broad system of integrity in any country. The code of conduct for members of parliament, code of conduct for councillors, code of conduct for officials are all part of a system of integrity. And they can only work if you properly enforce it. And it's the question the councillor raised. If you don't have commitment or political will to properly enforce it, there is no point in having that code, just at the outset. Right. So there must be political will to properly enforce the code. Because a system of integrity can only, an integrity system can only work if its parts are there. What is the purpose of a code and what is the purpose of an ethics committee? An ethics committee is not only to investigate complaints. An ethics committee is there to advise the members to do the right thing. So first of all, you're there to set guidelines on the manner in which members conduct themselves or councillors conduct themselves. So very important, people only focus at the tail end of the thing, where you're sitting at the end where people have made mistakes. Your first job is actually to make sure that people participate in the process and whatever they do is correct. So your most important job is to provide guidelines on what to do the right thing, prepare booklets, prepare workshops, etc. So that is first and fundamental to your task, is to actually develop a code of conduct, what guidelines are there that you can do? Then, of course, fundamental to the disclosure framework is the understanding that members are, or councillors are permitted to have business activity, and what are the guidelines to that business activity in terms of the rules, right? So you need to say that. And these are things you have to also educate the councillors as they come in, because people will come and go in council, and it's very important for them to have that framework all the time. And then you need to make sure, because you see, there's not only the rules, but what is acceptable to the community. Because there's the rules and there's the law. But we all know that within the community, there's things that people find unacceptable, etc., etc. And these are the kind of practices you need to develop in council. So that it is ultimately, these frameworks are about trust and trust of the leadership of your community. And so, you see, the thing is, if you don't understand that that is the basic purpose of a code, you're not going to get anywhere with it. And if you only think it's about punitive measures, about punishing people who do wrong, you're also not going to get the kind of behavior you want. A lot of the code is about shaping the conduct and the behavior of individuals. So that must be the main mindset. So our code of conduct in Parliament is really in terms of the rules. We don't have a legislative framework. So in that sense, that's where one of the differences are. The scope of our code, I think code of conduct for councillors, I don't think for Joburg it applies. I don't think there's traditional leaders in Joburg. So it's mainly the code of conduct applies to councillors. In Parliament, the code of conduct applies to members of Parliament. We require disclosure of the spouse's interests, and we require now, since our new code has been implemented, the disclosure of a dependent of a member. A dependent of a member is a member, anybody who lives in a member's house. So if you have like adult children who live with you, etc., if they have business interests, you have to disclose. So councillors only disclose their own interest. We have two levels of disclosure, the public disclosure, which is the disclosure of interest of the members, which is made public in the register, which we give to the media when we disclose, you know, when we adopt the register. And I think we were remiss, we didn't bring a copy, but it's a very thick booklet. We can make one copy available to the delegation before they leave. It's also, the members' disclosure is available on the parliamentary website. So if you go to the parliamentary website and you click, you'll see the members' register is available. So it's a very transparent document. Nobody has to ask us through Access to Information Act. But I know the Joburg Council has been very good. I mean, the ISS people always put a list of all the councils who have their information publicly available. And I know Joburg is quite good in that regard, because their information is always public. In terms of our code, for the past 17 years, the only time we've not had disclosure by members is when a member has been ill. Otherwise, all members submit. And it's a culture that must be inculcated in the council. So in other words, the officials and the people who chase the disclosure, you can't accept no for an answer. When the register is published, all the members must have submitted. And it's just no such thing. Every member belongs to a political party, and they are under the discipline of that party. And so those parties make sure. Here in Parliament, we have 454 members. It's not small amount of people to chase. And the chief whips of the political parties make sure that their members submit. There's just no negotiation around it. And I think the chairpersons of the committees over time have also always held that view, that the political parties hold their members accountable. So it is. So as I'm talking now, I'm giving you the framework. It's about transparency. It is about public accountability. And these are the frameworks of which the committee works. So all codes of conduct will have ethical provisions. Our code of conduct has ethical provisions and certain values which guide the provisions. Now, if you look at the code of conduct for councillors, you know, if you look at the reading of the act itself, it says that the councillor performs functions of office in good faith, honestly, transparently, and in the interest of the municipality with integrity. We say it a bit differently in Parliament, but it's the same kind of values. We say that members must act in terms of the public interest. They must maintain the integrity of Parliament. They must be committed to the eradication of discrimination. We talk about the issues, the underlying values which a member must act by. And these are very important. And you see, what I'm telling you about, it's not only about the financial dealings, but actually about the conduct which guides members. you know, the behavior which guides members. And from there, this is the key role of the committee, to instill in members, no matter what they do, however they commit their private life, in their public role as a representative, they are bound by these values of selflessness. And we define selflessness as one in which you, as an elected representative, represent the interests of your constituency first, not your own business interests. That is selflessness. Then we say that you must have integrity. And of course, the issue of public trust is fundamental in South African society at the moment. Then there's the issue of objectivity. Now, we don't talk about objectivity as being apolitical. We talk about objectivity as acting in the best interests of society at large and within your party views. Then, of course, honesty, and I think that's an important thing, and leadership. So those are the values, but they are values for people in public life anyways, and they appear in even the councillor's code in some kind of way, in an obscure way, not directly, but those are the fundamental values of the code. Then, of course, one of the big things every code of conduct has, whether it's for lawyers, whether it's for doctors, whether it's for members of parliament, is the issue on how you manage your conflict of interest. There will always be your private interest. As a human being, you have private interest, you know. And then there will be the broader interest of your profession. So as a person who's an elected representative, what is your job? You are paid to represent the public interest. So many thousand people have voted for you to actually go and represent their position in council. So that is your job. So when you have a private interest, when you have a business or a private interest, how then, when you have a conflict between those two, you manage those? So first of all, the first simple rule is don't accept any gift which can be constituted as a bribe. I mean, we have it, you have it. It can be said in however fancy a language you want, but that is one of the fundamental rules of conflict of interest. The second thing is, as an elected representative, you are elected to represent people's interests, so you can't lobby. In other words, you can't be paid to lobby for somebody's interests. So you're not allowed to be paid to lobby for remuneration. So I think in the council of soldiers, you can't represent somebody for pay. Then there's the other issue. I think it's more relevant in council than probably parliament. It's the issue of unauthorized use of information. You know, there's information you have access to, which is to promote the public good. And if you sell it today, the Minister of Finance locked up everybody before they go and have the budget talk, because maybe they decide they're going to increase the price of tobacco by 50 cents. So before they increase, that's for the big budget talk, not for the amendment to the budget, but generally then the budget comes. So if the Minister and all his staff knew that cigarettes are going to be increased by 50 cents, and all the members of the committee there, if they went to sell that information, they would get hundreds of, you know, somebody in the tobacco industry will, you know, somebody who is a wholesaler of cigarettes can hold back all the deliveries today because tomorrow they can sell it. So this is the unauthorized use of confidential information. It doesn't happen every day, every minute, but you know that if the city is going to develop a particular area and the council is now talking, the property prices can increase. If you tell all your friends in the property industry, you know, we're going to do that, and give me a share, but don't give it to me now. That's unauthorized use of confidential information. I think councillors know that. But also, you know, what happens in those kinds of places, many times where poor people could benefit from an increase in property price, you have a councillor who's now benefiting, as opposed to those residents who can benefit from the increase in price. And 6 months down the line, when the residents realize that, oh no, we've been had, then they become angry at councillors. And this is where the distrust between the members of the public and councillors actually occurs. So this is, you know, a lot of the rules is to remedy some evil. You know, that's what rules are. They're there to remedy some evil. And that's the evil it tries to remedy, to actually undermine the trust. Now, what prohibited business activity in Parliament is very new. I think councillors have had it for much longer. For the first time, I think we adopted a rule that members of Parliament may not do business with any state entity, actually, with any state entity. And it's quite a comprehensive prohibition. A member's spouse can do business with the state, but a member can't interfere in that contract, you know, in the getting of that contract, or even a member's business partner. If a member intervenes, that is actually a breach of the code. I see the councillors can also, without prior consent of council, actually participate in any contract with council, there's whole lot of stuff, and it's correct, because you see, ultimately, people often say, why should we be restricted in our business activity? The Constitution gives us the right to trade, etc. But as a public representative, you choose to represent the public. And if you do actions which undermine the public trust, but these codes are really about public trust, no matter what else you say. And so even in your implementation, you're going to deal with that. We have different disclosure requirements. There are two or three categories which we have, which you don't have. The one is... encumbrances, so we now have, it's quite new in Parliament, with liabilities that members own, you know, anything that you owe, we require disclosure. It's not in the public section, it's in the confidential section, but we don't mean like every Edgar's account or whatever small account. We're talking about big liabilities that you have, long-term loans that you owe, etc. We also require much more comprehensive disclosure about gifts. I mean, we detail that gifts much more, so it's land, property, I mean, sorry, gifts, hospitality, travel, sponsorship, benefits. You know, it's much more than I think you would do in council. Then we come to the big thing, which is really the very difficult thing in a political environment. How do you deal with breaches of the code? And it's fundamental to every ethics committee. As I said, I've been working here for a long time, and each committee struggles with that because... very much in a committee of your peers. You are members of parliament, members of council, you're judging your peers on how they act. So, and it is hard. It's because there are party considerations. There sometimes you have levels of seniority in your own political party. You may not be as senior as the person whose conduct you're considering. That's an issue. There may be pressure or not pressure. But how do you end up with a system that's fair? How do you end up with a system that's fair? I think that the Joburg City Council, in the appointment of an integrity commissioner, had tried to take away from the pressure on the committee itself. And I think that this relationship between the integrity commissioner and the committee, you need to resolve it to make it sure that there's no contradiction between those two roles. In our committee, we have now in the new code, and I'm not going to advocate that you adopt everything we've done because your circumstances are different. But what we've done is we've tried to define clearly the role of the registrar. I don't operate as independently as the integrity commissioner. In other words, I operate on instruction from the committee. But in the investigation, I report to the chairs, I report to the committee, but I don't decide that I can. So in other words, you know, you don't go on a wild goose chase and decide today, I don't like that member, I'm going to chase that member. There's a strict standard and a procedure which we follow. And that's, so what happens is it takes away the pressure from individual members, and we also have a strict procedure which we follow for any member no matter what their status is. So if there's a complaint, the process is you send a letter, the member must respond within 7 days. Once we receive a member, the response must be considered by the registrar. The registrar reports to the chairs. The chairs will say if the response, you know, the registrar will say this response is adequate, it's not adequate, etc., etc. So once you have a strict, if your process allows for fairness in the process, and the process has its own integrity, and there's no contradictions between different role players, it does create fairness in the process. Of course there must be political will. Of course there always will be political considerations. You're working in a political environment. But ultimately, everybody has to consider the broader good. Right? Because the damage to the institution is something you also have to measure. You will think about, oh my goodness, this is going to affect my party. Oh my goodness, this is going to affect. But you're also going to say, oh my goodness, how is this going to affect the integrity of council? So you're always balancing the two, and it will require that those difficult decisions, and the members will be able to tell you much better. I mean, I'm an official, so I don't face that kind of quandary, but members will tell you, and I'm sure they will speak for themselves. Mr. Mashile was the former chair of the Ethics Committee from the National Council of Provinces, so he will tell you possibly about that. And I think that most important, you need to define in your procedure the relationship between the committee and the integrity commissioner. And also, I think that through your political parties, also the issue of determining the levels of accountability, you know. Because, I mean, the issue is if members feel that this committee, if they can get away with it politically and they feel that they can sideline the committee, then the something, as members of all political parties, you need to discuss with your own political party and create it to make it. But there's, you know, the committee must take itself seriously as well. No, nobody should be bypassing the committee. I think, though, it's a very good system when a member upfront responds, right? Because an investigation, sometimes, I mean, we've had many instances where a member themselves, when they see something in the media, will proactively respond and say, you know, these are the allegations against me, these are the facts. Because the point is not to catch members out. The point of the committee, and your job is not an adversarial job. In other words, the member or the councillor is not your enemy. It's not an adversarial job. The job of the committee is to determine the facts. You must always bear that in mind. What is your job? It's to determine the facts. And once you determine the facts, you make a decision based on the facts. So once you have all the facts before you, you determine on the basis of the facts. And in Parliament, for example, our process requires that we publish a summary of the facts. So the decision must be based on the facts, and you must publish a summary of the facts. So if everybody is saying, look, the facts are never as clear as everybody thinks, you know, but there are some sets of facts that you can't deny. So if somebody says, I have not received a bribe, but then you get the money has been in the person's account, and they can't account for how they received it, etc., you get a copy of the deposit slip from so-and-so, and whatever. Those are the facts. You can't run away from the facts. And you make a decision based on the facts. There will be times when it's hard to make a decision. That's when you go to the Integrity Commissioner and you determine it. The issue of sanctions in Parliament, I mean, you know, in public life, the issue is there'll always be a call and a demand for further sanctions by whoever. But the issue is that, and it is also a contested political terrain, but I think that obviously one of the big things you have to remember is that councillors and members of parliament are elected by the public. And the issue is in a democratic system, the public's view prevails. You know, that they have elected those people. So when you're making sanctions, you can't, in Parliament, for example, the committee has got no right to expel a member. You know, that's the right of political parties. I know that in council, the MEC has the right to suspend a member or to actually expel a member, I mean a councillor. But those things must be considered very carefully. They can't be political tools. They always and always must be in terms of the sanction and in terms of the severity of the issue. And as you say, that every sanction will depend on the severity of that particular circumstance. Yeah, I think, and the issue about disclosure, as I said, ultimately it's the will by political parties. If the political parties determine that there will be disclosure by every member, there will be disclosure by every member. That's the end of the story.
I know that I've already announced, said your name, but just introduce yourself, everyone has done so.
I am Fezile Bengu, I'm the programming whip of Parliament, I'm also whipping the Ethics Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Jefferson. I just wanted to say just a few things. The establishment of the Ethics Committee, it's made out of politicians. Even in council, it's made out of politicians. And the representation from political parties should be seen as a method of putting together the committee. And once the committee has been established, then it must function as a unit. You are no longer representing a party in the ethics committee. No. No. The fact that you are coming from a political party is just simply for the establishment to say, how do we put together membership of this committee. Then you put up a formula or whatever that draws from political parties, and then you come together. Then you start behaving as the ethics committee of the city of Joburg. And then you start functioning as such, and not function as if when you stand, then you are representing a particular political party. Every time when you raise your hand and speak, everybody can pick up that, no, you are actually representing interests of a particular political party. No. You get established, when you are in there, you work as a unit, then there is the code of conduct now that you must look after and implement within council. The other thing is that everywhere, wherever we are as people, like yourself being the ethics committee, is that there should be people that are able to say the right things, even if those right things are not easily accepted by people, as long as they are correct. To say the things that ordinarily people would not like to say, but because they are correct, then you must do so. So in other ways, is that in a situation like yourself in the city of Joburg, you have been put in a position where you should be able to tell a councillor if a councillor crossed the line. You must be able to do so and say, here, Councillor X, you have crossed the line. Irrespective of where the councillor comes from which party or whatever, you are a unit now that must actually uphold that particular value system and be able to say, even if the councillor is your friend from the same political party, but if he has crossed the line, you must operate at a level where you are able to do so and say that. You are able to do so and say that. And of course, it's like as Fazile has indicated, there must also be an appreciation for councillors or members of parliament, whatever, you know, is a collective that the code refers to. You know, to appreciate subscribing to a particular value system. Subscribe to that. And when you have the code of conduct for the city of Joburg, and then it spells out a particular value system, and then you must enforce it and make sure that all councillors appreciate that, they must subscribe to that value system, which says boundaries and it says lines that should not be crossed, in order to make sure that as a unit, as a council, then you behave correctly, you retain the integrity of council. And then the other issue that I just wanted to raise, Chairperson, is you know, it's when you undergo this investigation or whatever, when there is a prima facie evidence that a particular councillor has crossed the line, you really need to make sure that you follow a fair procedure. And not necessarily that you follow it theoretically. You must be seen as well to be fair in how you are actually doing that, so that the outcome of your investigation is accepted. Because there is no point, you know, it's of bringing in some unfair, you know, it's procedures and biasness, as it has been indicated there. Because then you're going to have a problem, you see, when you've got your ultimate conclusion of the investigation and a report, and you find that the report is not acceptable, and then you'll definitely have a problem. And the last thing that I just wanted to indicate as well is as Fazil has actually indicated, is that it should not be, term can I use? You know, it's straight jacketed to say that because we are correct within the law, then I'm right as a councillor. And you say, no, as a councillor, I'm allowed to have a tender with the municipality as long as I do 1, 2, 3, 4. I've disclosed it, I've done that, then it is fine. Within the law, then you are correct. What Fazila actually indicated is that if the public out there sees that and see red in that particular thing, then you interpret as a politician, then it goes down. And then the decorum of your council goes down, and the stage of your council goes down. Because one thing for sure is that as politicians, we are not selling our professions as a doctor or as a legal whatever or an engineer or a teacher. We are not selling that. You rely on your integrity as a politician. If you lose the integrity, then your political life then gets ruined completely. So it needs to be guarded that your behavior does not affect your fellow politician next door. You drag the whole state of council down by being biased, by being corrupt, and doing all sorts of things. It's not you that goes down alone. You'll be dragging even the whole council down. The next thing also, you'll be dragging your own political party down. Therefore, it is important that subscribing to a particular value system and the members then also try and comply with it. It says yourself, your integrity. It says the integrity of your party. It says the integrity of cancer. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Member. My name is Sam Matthias. It's interesting to realize that at the very lowest level of government, at the municipal level, there is an interest to scale up the issue of ethics and conduct of public representatives. And in seeking to do so, establish or facilitate regulatory methods and means to hold and to keep systems that would be, which would promote ethical behavior and proper conduct. The Constitution enjoins us, first and foremost, to uphold the rule of law. Various sections in the Constitution enjoin us to uphold the rule of law as public representatives. Secondly, flowing from the Constitution, various pieces of legislation have been formulated to guide on how to conduct ourselves as public representatives within the framework of law. Ethics, the opposite of it is evil. If you lack ethics, it means you are unethical. And ethics are drawn from various life experiences and the systems, norms, and cultures that produce. And Mrs. Fraser has gone at length to illustrate and also to bring forth what informs ethics and ethical conduct. But however, ethics is not just a walk in the garden. It's a maze which must be navigated with a great deal of courage or conviction. Just as you have it in the Bible, the Ten Commandments, those serve as the fundamental principles for Christians to uphold and conduct themselves in an ethical manner on the basis of their belief system. And imagine if all of us here were Christians, and any of us will venture in a situation where he or she breaches one of the Ten Commandments, would that be accepted? Surely not. It would not. In fact, whoever who breaches one of the Ten Commandments will be casted out. Now, once we have established principles as they are contained in our own code of conduct, members of Parliament and NCOP, so it means we'll be required to observe and to uphold those principles.
and they are contained here. It means, therefore, the Council of Joburg will also have to formulate such rules in the form of code of ethical conduct and all of that, and facilitate an internal process through which you approve in your own way bylaws or whatever that would of course be accepted as a framework for which all shall be bound by its provisions. But that requires a great deal of courage or conviction. Thank you.
But David, there is a code. I'm sure copies of this been made available to people to study carefully on their own. In the back, which is fine. I was going to say that we have a challenge, though. I'm just about to open the discussions up. But the challenge is that the lunch is at 1:30 p.m. Yeah, we started a bit late. And we must be in the chain in the house at 2 o'clock, but the original room was actually just before 2. So I'm troubled in terms of time. So what do we do? I was said that this is not the first and last engagement. The process continues.
No, thanks. We also realized from our side when we were doing the tour that the time is against us. But I want to suggest, but before I suggest, Honorable Chair, I think from our side the biggest challenge maybe is to develop a handbook. We do have a standing rule book, as the Honorable MP was suggesting, that gives guidelines to the councillors in terms of code of conduct. But we also have Municipal Financial Management Act system that guides us in terms of how do we conduct ourselves as councillors. So I think what is shortfall from our side is to look at the handbook from Parliament and then maybe see everything might not be the same because of the level of the spheres of government. But going forward, I want to suggest that because we do have officials here, legal advice, and we've got office from the Integrity Commissioner's Office, it means after this meeting, they must just follow on issues that we have raised together with their counterparts this side, so that they can also make sure that maybe in the either before the end of the day we get a presentation, and if there is a need again to meet with the MPs, I think that will be the best way to do it. I'm saying this because the community and the public are watching us as public representatives. You know, when you are a public representative, you drive a nice car, people always think that you're corrupt. So these are the things that we need to deal with, and maybe also taking our committees to the public in terms of making sure they understand how do we do things in the council or in as MPs. Maybe when you do your tours in terms of public hearings, you can also invite us so that you become part of those public tours. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just wanted to indicate that the presentation made by Fazil, I think it was extensive, but we can't say that it has actually addressed everything that they would have loved to hear. And to say that if they still have time, I'm sure Chair And Fazil still has some time. After lunch, they can reconvene as to if it is possible. And then they can just clarify some of the detailed questions that they may be having. I think she has got the capacity to deal with all that. And then and leave the administrative whatever work that may be required between the commissioner and the legal advisors to collect whatever documentation that they may need moving forward, while ourselves then we have moved back to the house. I think it shouldn't be a problem. Then they can have that interaction with Fazil and really get first-hand clarifications on some of the provisions of the code and the positions or the value systems that she has actually talked to that needs to be adhered to. Chairperson, just simply to steal about the 15 seconds, I just want to indicate that the members that have been appointed in this ethics committee in the city of Joburg, then if they are doing their work properly, the first indication that they are going to come across is when they make more enemies. And if you work as an integrity committee and you think you are working but everybody is happy around you, then surely something is wrong. If you are doing your work, you'll be trampling on certain people's toes and you'll definitely hear in the corridors that they're no longer happy about you because you are trampling on their toes. That would be a first-hand indication that you are trying to get people to comply to certain things in council. Thanks, sir.
Can we end on this note then, that we recognize that this is not the last engagement that we have together. Secondly, that at the official level, official level, there must be a bit more interaction, sharing of documents and so on. And thirdly, that at some point we should look at the possibility of coming together again. Maybe when the Parliament committee is doing its round, it must consider going via Joburg or meeting with additional number of municipalities that have got similar type committees for further engagement. That has been raised, I think it's fairly important. It's a point that has been raised by Comrade Y. That when we do, as around us, as committees visit visiting sites and so on, we should consider inviting them and ensuring that they are part of the process. Because there are going to be better kinds of engagements that will be involved in. So this may be very, very important. Because it will assist to reinforce our own efforts as a committee of parliament. Because there can never be an end to exchanging ideas and sharing experiences. So the members, councillors, fellow councillors, I can say fellow councillors as the former councillor myself, honourable members of parliament. Let's end the discussion today on that note, and